is the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca for August 4, 2007. Hi there, everyone, and welcome to the Pet Podcast on Pets.ca. My name is Marco. We are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and today is August 4, 2007. For today's show, we have a very interesting interview coming up, and I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it, and it's going to demystify some common behavior in dogs. And the podcast is going to be about mounting and humping behavior in dogs. But before we get into that, let's get into the good news, which is also somewhat related. So I was at a newsstand while on vacation recently, and I caught the title of Business Week. And Business Week is not a magazine that I normally read, but the title or the front of the cover was all about the pet economy. You know, we're trying to feature a little bit of pet news, and it was news for me. I'd never heard of it before, but it seems now that the pet economy is so robust that many new inventions are being made. And one of these new inventions is called nudicles. And what nudicles are they are artificial testicles for your dog. So after you've gotten your dog fixed or neutered, you know, you don't want your dog to feel, you know, ashamed of his body because, you know, he's slightly altered. So you could actually implant artificial testicles in your dog. And the price ranges from, you know, $99 or so for plasticky looking ones to $1,000 for natural looking silicone testicles. And this is not a joke, although it amused the heck out of me. This is not really a joke. The inventor, Greg Miller, has sold something like 250,000 pair of these artificial testicles called nudicles. They are patented, and apparently he invented them because, you know, he thought his dog felt bad about his appearance, which gives me a good giggle because you could just see one dog looking to another dog, you know, watching a dog pass by with nudicles saying to each other, "Oh, those can't be real." Okay, I think I'm amusing myself. But anyway, you know, I thought it was a light story and something to make us all smile rather than the bad news that we often hear about with relation to pet stories. But I guess, you know, that good news story or funny news story, I should say, is somewhat related to our interview, which is coming up now. And it's an interview with Elizabeth Simpson of Tenderfoot Training on humping and mounting behavior in dogs and what we can do about it and why it's not the biggest deal and just generally demystifying the whole concept. As always, if you want to comment on our last episode about hormones, where we interviewed Dr. Lee, feel free to do so via the blog, www.pets.ca/blog. Of course, you can do it through the forum. Just make your way to the forum. And as always, you can send me an email at pets.ca@gmail.com. We love to get comments, and please send them. Of course, you can also subscribe very easily via iTunes just by clicking the subscribe in iTunes button on the front page of the blog. It's all free. It's all fun, we hope. And you can use any other podcatcher you want as well just by copying the feed address or the blog address, www.pets.ca/blog, into your favorite podcatcher. So on to the interview that I just recently did with Elizabeth on humping and mounting behavior in dogs, and let's get into it now. So I'd like very much to welcome a special guest today. This is a guest that's been on several times before. It's Elizabeth from tenderfoottraining.com. She's one of the experts on our bulletin board. And she and her husband, Doug, have been running Tenderfoot Training for a number of years, and they are great specialists in behavior. So hi there, Elizabeth. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure to have you. And for today's show, we thought we'd talk about a topic that comes up pretty frequently, actually, and it has to do with mounting and humping behaviors in dogs. It's somewhat confusing for some people, though for you guys, you obviously know all the answers. So maybe you could give us a quick answer. When a dog gets neutered, why do so many dogs still exhibit humping behaviors? I think most people think that once they get neutered, they shouldn't be exhibiting these behaviors anymore. So why do dogs, neutered dogs, exhibit humping and mounting behaviors?
Well, first of all, because it's not always sexual. Okay, just because you take away that strong testosterone drive doesn't mean you've taken away all the drive. Sometimes a dog that has been able to be allowed to mate with other dogs and then he gets neutered, he remembers that it was fun. So he might try it again with another intact male. And then, he might try it again with another intact female when she comes in the season because he remembers. But with other dogs that have been neutered at an early age that were not permitted to breed, it isn't necessarily about reproduction all the time. But you know what? It's not always about dominance either. A lot of people tend to just immediately jump on the dominance bandwagon, and it just isn't. Sometimes it's just fun, or it's an expression of your emotions, or it's an expression of physical, just pure physical excitement. It doesn't need to be that it's sexual in its intention. It's just that some, especially immature dogs, teenagers especially, they get so riled up having fun that they will just start exhibiting physical excitement through humping.
Okay, very interesting. And how does it work for female dogs? Is it any different?
Actually, not really.
Okay.
In all animals, because the thing is that we need to demystify humping behavior, and we need to make it normal. This is normal behavior for almost all animals. And whether it's a human being, a dog, an elk, it doesn't matter. My birds, my parrots, they breed with their toys because these are sexual beings. So there is a certain element of reproductive behavior. Sometimes they're just practicing for the future. Sometimes it is true desire to reproduce. But so many times it's about social hierarchy. Sometimes it's about just pure affection. And sometimes it's just pure physical excitement.
Okay, so the difference between a female spayed dog and a male neutered dog, both neutered at a young age, let's say they've had no sexual experience, again, it's for the reasons you've just mentioned. It could be pleasure, it could be excitement, could be any of those reasons.
Right. My mother had a little Yorkshire Terrier. He was fixed at an early age, and every time I would walk into the room, he would be so happy to see me that he would go grab a toy and start mounting behavior. And it was, he knew he wasn't going to be allowed to mount my leg because I had set those boundaries. So he just needed to get rid of that energy on something that he could, and the little toy was his size, and it worked out. It's just that people get freaked out about it. People are uncomfortable to seeing mounting behavior. It makes them sort of, you know, socially unacceptable behavior is what they think. And so we're very quick to discourage it. But really, in a dog's mind, it's completely natural. And it doesn't always have to be about dominance either. We have six dogs. And some of our more subordinate dogs will actually go to the more dominant dogs and just try to mount them. And our dominant dogs don't necessarily whip around and say, "Knock it off, buddy. You're not dominant over me." Sometimes they even permit it because it's really not a bother to them. They don't care.
Huh, it's just really interesting stuff, actually. It's totally interesting. And I think you're right. Some people are maybe a bit prudish about the whole sexual thing with their dogs. And maybe in general, some people are more prudish than others. It's normal. But I think for a lot of people, it's just more the knowledge. I mean, for me, this is fascinating. Like, I know a little bit about what you're saying, but oh my God, you're so enlightening me. And it's really, for a lot of people, it's just about the knowledge. So
right, and that's it. It's just about we have to get over our stuff. Now, there are times when definitely it's not appropriate. If my dog went to hump my guest that just showed up at the front door, I would definitely have limits and boundaries on his behavior because I don't want to make my guest feel uncomfortable.
Right.
But he might just be saying, "Happy to see ya."
Right.
Now, it doesn't mean that he's trying to dominate my guest. He's just happy. And two, if dogs between each other are not appropriate in their behavior, whether it's jumping up, whether it's mounting behavior, whatever it is, other dogs have a right to set a boundary on that, as do we. Just as if my child were behaving too assertively with another child, that child has a right to set a boundary, and I as the parent have a right to say, "Hey, that's not how you act with other kids. Knock it off." And so because, as I said before, my dogs will sometimes permit my other dogs to mount them. But if they mounted them too assertively or with too much enthusiasm or too much energy, then the dog being mounted has every right to say, "Knock it off. You just crossed a boundary."
You would think like we're having this conversation between consenting adults, and in a way we are, you know, consenting adult dogs, and if they consent, yahoo, and if they don't, it's not appropriate.
Right, and it's not as though we're talking, I mean, and I'm sorry to get graphic, we're not talking about actual breeding. They're not actually having intercourse. They're just physically expressing themselves. So it's not as though we're really, you know, they're not taking, it's like heavy petting. they're doing the precursor. They're doing foreplay. But again, to them, it may not even be sexual. It's just, you know, communication. It's just emotions. It's sometimes physical. And it's when you see, especially a young male dog, even when he's been neutered, you could literally just be talking to that dog and he will start to have an erection. You might be petting that dog and you look down and, whoa, okay, we have a little visitor.
Right.
But it's, and people, again, get freaked out. They don't want to see that. But the dog is just expressing that he's comfortable, he's happy, he's, you know, he's in a good place.
Right.
That's
right.
Okay. It's all right.
Okay, but it's obviously not all right. And
right.
Especially when they don't want to be mounted.
Yeah.
It's not all right. And, you know, it's a behavior that we should we stop it?
If it seems with the dog, let's start with the dogs. If it seems
yeah.
that one dog is being inappropriate with the other, maybe it's gone on for too long, or the other dog is good enough to defend himself and he's uncomfortable, yeah, step in. Say, knock it off. That's not okay. And you can give it a word. You can say no hump or no mount or whatever, just as if he were jumping on another dog or, you know, butting him with his head. If he was doing inappropriate behavior, you have every right to step in and say knock it off. But if it's just a couple little mounting behaviors and nobody seems generically bothered by it, then it's no big deal. Now, with your guests, it's going to be a little bit more important that you step up to the plate and say this is not what we do. Just like jumping up on somebody, some dogs will tend to go up to somebody and start to wrap their front leg around the person's leg and then start mounting behavior. And so you need to catch it early, recognize what's going to happen or what the dog is thinking about, and then stop it, or be more proactive and just teach them in advance. We greet people by sitting down nicely and being patient. So there's that element of, yes, we always want to be proactive, teach what the correct behavior is, but sometimes we're not on top of it as much as we should be. We're busy trying to greet our guests. We forgot about the dog. Starts jumping and mounting. Then we need to step in and say, you know, go lay down or get off and sit quietly. Now we'll come over and say hi to you. Always putting boundaries on good and bad behavior.
Okay, as of course we should for both children and dogs and, you
Absolutely.
Know, and people that we need to teach.
Right.
What if it's a stubborn dog or a young dog and he's super excited? For the sake of argument, let's say that we're talking about neutered pets. Our pets
okay.
should be neutered anyway
Absolutely.
Or spayed anyway, so let's stick with that.
Okay.
So let's say it's a young dog and he or she is very active and stubborn about the mounting behavior and doesn't listen right away. How can we teach them more effectively to stop?
Okay, it's the same that you would do for any behavior, and you can just equate this to jumping up, because a dog is intruding his body onto somebody's personal space, okay? So whether he's stubborn about it or too enthusiastic about it, it's just like as if he were jumping up on somebody's body. You first have to teach the proper response, which would be maybe sit-stay. And so we're going to practice greeting people with a sit-stay. And then maybe practice with people that he doesn't know or people that are coming through the door with more enthusiasm so that you're upping the distraction level. You want happy to see you and they'll try to jump or hump. And so you want to always be challenging them at that higher level, but you are ready. Typically the dog is on the leash so that you have ultimate control and you can walk up to the person and he is good and calm. The person can then come down and pet the dog calmly, not get all excited, and then when you get good at that, then the person can start using more enthusiasm and energy, and the dog still has to maintain self-control and remain in the sit-stay. Sometimes that's not always going to be convenient. Maybe you perchance to meet somebody on the pathway and your dog, and you didn't sort of anticipate any of this, so your dog is just going to learn how to walk up to somebody with good manners and not make that final leap to either jump or mount. And they have to learn to make that good decision. If you are a good leader in your dog's life, then they should look to you first anyway. They should say in their mind, oh, here comes a stranger or a friend. Mom, what do you want me to do? And they look to you for the answer, and then you're ready to help them guide them through their choices. Worst case scenario, you didn't catch them in time, somebody popped through the door to say hi and you weren't ready, then and they went ahead and jumped or mounted, then you are ready to correct them and say off, and you're going to pressure them with your energy to get them to back off of the person, then invite them to sit stay, teach them what you do want, and then have the person greet them.
Wow. So it really is just like any other bad behavior
yep.
that your dog's going to exhibit.
Yep.
You know, it's our issue. You know, we get freaked out by the behavior, so we may react inappropriately when in reality, it's just like, you know, a jump or two,
yep.
or any maladaptive behavior that your dog was going to show.
Right. That's socially inappropriate in our human world. And that's all it is. It's really, you know, to me, just the mounting behavior in general is treated like, as you say, like any other behavior. It's just, you just teach what the proper response is and discourage the response you don't want.
Wow.
So it's really quite simple, and we tend to over-dramatize it because, again, we have all these social issues.
Because we have issues about sexuality, let's face it.
A lot of us do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's just, you know, it's always about the human in the end.
Yeah.
It's really rarely about the dog. It's always about our stuff. What we let them get away with, what we have problems with, what we don't understand or don't understand how to communicate to them. It's always about us.
Cool. Cool.
Easy answer, though, huh?
I mean, I think we were expecting like a lot more, you know, that it was going to be so complex that it was going to have all these, you know, all these hormonal reasons. So, speaking of hormones, do hormones play into this in some way?
You know, in my mind, honestly, yeah, they can. Obviously, hormones, that's one reason why we neuter our males is because we don't want that surge of testosterone to take over where they're starting to look, you know, smell for females all the time or claim a larger territory and start wandering or start having sort of that more edgy behavior where they're more challenging than they would be if they weren't neutered. So definitely neutering, you know, has a huge benefit to a dog's behavior. But no matter what, whether your dog is intact or fixed, it still comes down to the boundaries and the rules that you have set for that dog. We had an intact male for about 3 years, an Australian Shepherd, and he was the dominant dog in our sub pack, and he never humped anybody, excuse my French, and he never behaved inappropriately just because he was intact. That's because we raised him with good manners and good boundaries. Our other dogs that have been fixed from an early age never had any issues either because they were raised with good manners and good boundaries. And it shouldn't matter if you do a good job of raising your dog.
That's right. At the end of the day, it's about the behavior, not the hormones. It's about them. It's about them looking at you when you raise your voice just that little bit and understanding that they are doing a bad behavior.
Right. Or being soft and sweet when they're doing a good behavior.
Or being, exactly.
But absolutely, hands down, dogs need to be neutered and spayed. Absolutely, hands down. They have a less incidence of cancers. Their lives will be healthier and longer overall. Males especially, their behavior will be softened. And it doesn't necessarily, if your dog is, say, humping people, jumping on people, barking at everybody, behaving just like a twit, neutering him might be part of the solution, but it does not dismiss the idea that you have to still train your dog.
Right.
Okay, it's not going to make those behaviors go away if you're still a permissive parent.
And let's say just for those few people that are going to get their dogs in order to be champions of their breed, etc., and they're getting them from the best breeders possible, and they are going to keep them intact. Again, if they are exhibiting the mounting behavior, it's going to be the exact same result from your point of view, or rather the exact same treatment solution from your point of view as a fixed or spayed female?
Yes, you might have to work a little bit more intensely in that you're going to have to be more focused on your dog. You're going to have to be more clear about his boundaries and about your leadership if he's intact, because he is going to possibly challenge you a little bit harder for your leadership because he's got those hormones running through his body that are telling him, hey, buddy, you might just be the one in charge.
Right.
And so he's going to have more of an edge, more of a determination, maybe more of a stubbornness. But again, it comes right back down to the individual dog, because you could have 16 intact males and they could all have different levels of being challenging to their people, who the dog is by nature.
Just because they're intact, that doesn't necessarily mean that their drive to mate or to hump is going to be much higher. It might, but not necessarily. Is that
not
what you're saying?
Not necessarily, right.
Okay.
I mean, my little terrier who has been fixed from an early age, he will hump the dog who was kept intact until age 3.
Wow.
Okay? And the one that was kept intact, that is, I consider sort of the leader of our sub-pack, he tolerates it. He's fine. And he just, you know, the little guy is kind of on his ankle because he's a little terrier and it's a big Australian Shepherd. But he tolerates it. He doesn't mind it. It doesn't bother him a bit. It's just that that's part of their relationship.
So interesting.
and you want to know, okay, this is one I wasn't sure I was going to share, but I will.
Go ahead. We're listening.
Australian Shepherd, okay, he is Doug's primary dog. I have my three dogs. Doug has his three dogs. We each have sort of a primary dog within our three. So this Australian Shepherd is Doug's primary dog. And if they're sitting on the couch together, because we permit some of our dogs to be on our furniture.
Okay.
And they're sitting on the couch together, and Doug will go to get up off of the couch. This Australian Shepherd, his name is Cowboy, who was kept intact for 3 years, will sometimes try to edge up to Doug and look as though he's going to start mounting behavior. But it's not because he feels dominant over Doug. He is very clear that Doug is in charge. And it's not that he's trying to have breeding behavior with Doug.
Okay.
How do you talk about this? I don't know. It's just that he's kind of affectionately saying, don't leave. I want to be with you. Okay? It's almost his way of kind of giving Doug a hug.
Huh.
And we don't permit it. We definitely say, okay, knock it off. We don't want that. But it's, you just see it sort of showing up in his, just his body stance, that he's about to think about doing that. And then we say, we don't want that. And Doug leaves. But it's just Cowboy's way of saying, hey, you're my best friend in the whole world, and I have affection for you. And it just shows up in his body. That's all.
Huh. So it's not necessarily a flirtatious behavior. It's more affection, you're my friend behavior.
Yeah. And my primary dog, who is a large terrier mix, he's a lurcher, will do the exact same thing.
So interesting.
Yeah, and it's not because we've permitted or been permissive. It's just, it doesn't show up every day. It's just on a rare occasion it'll show up and you go, wow, look at that. You know, you know he's clear that he's not in charge, so it's not a dominant issue. It's not a challenging issue. He doesn't do it to anybody else except us. And you just know it's sort of his way of saying, you know, don't leave the couch. I want you to hang here with me.
So interesting. So it's different levels of affection at different times. It may show up, it may not show up, and it often has nothing to do with sexuality.
Right, or dominance. Yeah. I mean, you live with enough dogs for long enough, you see a lot of things.
Right.
So, and females will mount too, because females are sexual creatures as well, and they're emotional creatures, and they're physical creatures. And even out in the wild, you will see, we have this on footage, Doug filmed female elk mounting big bulls in order to tell that bull that they were ready to be bred. And that is a very rare thing to see, a female elk mounting a male elk.
Wow, that's so interesting. I think most people would just naturally think, or if they haven't been around, you know, as many dogs as you, that the females would engage in a submissive behavior or assume a submissive stance or submissive posture, but that's not the case.
No, not at all.
You learn something new every day with you, Elizabeth.
Life here on the farm is fun.
for sure. No, but it's absolutely fascinating, actually. And you know, I think it'll actually put a lot of people's misconceptions aside. A lot of people have these old-fashioned points of view, and I think this more, it's not even enlightened. It's just natural behavior. It's just they need to hear it from a professional like you. You know, I think it'll put some of their myths and false thinking aside.
Right, because the thing that everybody jumps to immediately is, oh, he's being dominant. No, it just might be inappropriate play behavior. It just might be tension. It might be just excitement. It could be a thousand different things.
I mean, to be fair, it can be dominance, but don't assume it is.
Not at all. Okay. And I would say the majority of time it's not dominance. You have to read each individual situation. It's like every time a dog growls does not mean he's being aggressive. You have to put it into perspective in the individual situation between the individuals that are involved.
Cool. Great. I'm so glad we had this conversation.
Oh, good.
Is there other stuff that you want to add?
Well, the one thing that people can do is, and this is kind of going to sound silly, but it's as though when you're training and your dog is barking, and you want to stop him from barking. Well, sometimes you'll end up saying no bark. But what we need to do is help him learn what barking is. So you teach bark. okay? So that when you say no bark, he understands, don't do that. So some people will say, actually give it a word. You might call it humping. You might call it quickie. You might call it, I don't know what you're going to call it.
You can call it whatever you want. Yeah, yeah.
But give it a name. And so that when you say no humping or no quickie, then the dog understands what you're talking about. So that you can, if you see him heading towards a guest or a dog and you think, whoa, I bet he's going to do that, you can tell him in advance, don't do that. Okay, so you can help guide his thinking before it becomes an action. It's easier on him, it's easier on you.
And just because some people might want to try this, how would you give...
I'm going to start again. Sometimes what you have to do is, it's like when a dog barks, you say, good bark. Or when a dog is drinking, you say, good drinking.
Okay.
Or good eat. And so if you catch him in the act with something that your dog is having an issue with, you can name it a couple times so he understands. And then you're going to use the no hump or no humping.
It's going to be naming. Okay. But the key to the dog's learning is going to be naming the activity during the activity.
Yeah. They have to, for anything that you want to name, they have to be doing the action in order to create the association.
Right.
Okay? I mean, you can show them movies on TV, but they're not going to get it.
Right.
But they have to be physically doing it in order for you to reward it or for you to correct it.
Right.
Because dogs live in the heartbeat of what they're doing. And then you have to create opportunities to repeat it so they understand, oh, every time you say sit and my bottom hits the ground, you get really happy, so that must be what sit is. Or every time my bottom's already on the ground and you say good sit, that must be what you're associating that with. So you just have to do it with the other behavior.
Got
it. Harder to create. It's a purely enthusiastic response to life.
And you know what? Like every time you describe solutions to these common situations that everyone has, it's so logical. It's so logical.
Well, we want to simplify. We don't want to make it more complex. This is not science. Dogs are very black and white about their world. And so really, let's try to keep it as simple as possible, because the success of the human being is what creates the success of the dog. When you can think clearly about it and you can map it out in your mind very clearly and succinctly, you're going to have just a way easier time. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. It makes total sense. So thank you so much for giving us that information, Elizabeth, on mounting and humping behaviors. It's going to put a lot of our listeners' minds at ease. And, you know, it'll demystify the whole situation.
Well, and I think that's what's important, is that we don't over-dramatize it. This is natural. We're living with animals. This is natural in their world.
So thanks again, Elizabeth, for joining us. And we know we'll be speaking to you in the near future again. Maybe it'll be Doug next time. Maybe it'll be you. But it'll be in the next little while.
Okay.
So thanks so much again, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you so much for this interesting topic.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
And that was our interview with Elizabeth Simpson of tenderfoottraining.com. And I got to say, the information that she has is just superb. Her and her husband, Doug, have been running Tenderfoot Training, I think it's well over 20 years now, and the information that they've amassed is just unbelievable. And whenever you have a simple or complex issue with your dog, they always seem to be able to find a really easy solution. And it's just based on experience. They've seen the patterns over and over again, and they just have easy, effective ways on how to deal with almost all problems. They also have a website, of course, at www.tenderfoottraining.com, and they do sell an amazing DVD, and it covers a lot of what we cover on our podcast, except in amazing detail. And I've seen this DVD, I've seen it twice already, and it's really amazing, it's really easy to follow, and it comes highly recommended. As a disclosure, I don't get anything when they sell a CD, it's just an amazing CD. And, you know, I'd rather tell you about something amazing, because there's a lot of schlock products out there. This is a great CD. And if you buy it and you have questions, you know, afterwards, they just answer those questions for you by phone and really help you on a one-to-one basis. So it comes highly recommended. And that's going to do it for this week's podcast. We kind of got a little bit out of sync because of vacation time in July, but we have another interesting podcast coming up really quickly, and it's all about a laser surgery. And it's an interview we did with Dr. Lee, who does practice laser surgery, and we talk all about you know, the appropriate times to use it and the whole concept of surgery in general, laser surgery, checking out, you know, veterinarians that use laser surgery, getting referrals, etc. It's a really, really, really worthwhile coming up podcast, and should be released fairly soon. As always, as mentioned at the beginning of the show, you can comment in any of the multiple ways, and we love to get comments. So, you know, just please comment. You know, if you have questions, criticisms, you know, that's how we make the show even better. So thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll be back to you really shortly. And as always, please give your pets a little scratchy under the chin from Marco. Bye for now.